Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. To search for other podcasts you might like, click bbc.co.uk/5live, where you'll also find our terms of use.
It's time for our tech phone-in. So if you've been cursing your screen, debating an upgrade, or just wondering how to follow the Olympics, then Fevzi Turkalt from the website gadgetdetective.com can help. He's here for the next hour. Good morning, Fevzi.
Good morning.
So assuming that people's gadgets are working, give us a call. The number is 0500 909 693, or you can send us a text to 85058. You can get in touch via social media at BBC5Live, or there's email as well. So that's upallnight@bbc.co.uk. And as well, this hour will be available as a podcast if you go online and search for Let's Talk About Tech. So first of all, Fevzi, just a couple of things that have been catching our eye already this week. There's one story which is pretty fascinating. There's a blogger, a French security researcher, who reckons he managed to turn the tables on a cyber scammer. Just explain kind of what's gone on in this story.
Okay, so there's a scam that we should all be aware of, whereby we are contacted in some way. It could be a phone call, or it could be a pop-up on our screen that tells us that our system is infected, and that they are Microsoft, or they are Apple, or they are some body that we would trust, such as your internet service provider, and that they're going to fix it for you, but that there's a fee. And we're invited at some point to allow a person on the other end of a phone line access to our computer remotely. So to fix it, they say that they need access. They get you to click on certain buttons, which in effect allows them to remotely control your computer. At that point, they've got you. There's two ways in which they scam you. They take credit card information from you, and in doing so, you know, abuse that information, steal your money. But also, once they've got access to your computer, they've got access to your emails, they can take details of your online banking or your credit card or other information that's stored on there, and misuse that information. So it can cost you an absolute fortune, and it is a scam. It's illegal, but most of these people are outside the UK territory and outside the reach of the British police. However, an individual security researcher in France claims that he got the better of one of these scammers, and it's not something that I would recommend to others, but it certainly just makes one feel a little bit warm inside. What he basically did was he played along. So even though he was an expert and he knew exactly what they were up to from the outset, he played along right to the point where he was able to read out the details of a credit card which was generated to pass the rules as being a real credit card, but actually wasn't one, and it wouldn't work. And he claimed that his eyesight wasn't too good, and he said, I've tried reading it, I really can't read it clearly. I can send you a picture of it, he said.
Okay.
So he basically said, because once they opened up this link where they could control his computer remotely, and by the way, they were not controlling his computer, they were controlling a virtual machine inside the computer. So To the scammers, it looked like an actual machine, but what it really was a ring-fenced area where these people couldn't do any real harm. So what he did was, through this link, he sent them what purported to be a compressed photo of his card, and the scammer fell for it. They opened they double-clicked on the image, which, by the way, we should never click on links that in emails, and particularly from people we don't know. And what he actually did to them was he sent them a piece of malware, a piece of what's called ransomware. So it's an infective program as soon as you double click it, it opens, it runs silently in the background on your machine, and it encrypts, that is to say, encodes every file on the recipient's computer, and then offers to ransom it back to them once it's done so. So then that person is told they have to pay however many hundreds of dollars to actually get their files back. And that's what he did. So he scammed it, and the guy at the other end is saying, oh, I clicked on your photo of your card, but nothing happened. And the guy could barely contain his delight, because he'd scammed the scammer. I imagine he's actually broken the law in whatever he was in France, I guess. So he's probably broken French law by doing that. It's not something I would recommend to others, because it's in most territories it's illegal to mess about with other people's computers, even scammers' computers. But you know, I suppose the scammer got scammed, and we all feel rather happy about that. But I suppose the bigger story is, you know, just be aware that this is happening. They sound very convincing. They're not your bank. If you think that they are your bank or Microsoft or whatever, bear in mind, first of all, Microsoft doesn't ring you up and offer to fix your computer, and not for a sum of money either. Just, you know, disbelieve it. If any of that's going on, if you think you've got an infection on your computer, run a piece of trusted antivirus or anti-spyware software on your computer and see if you can reproduce it. If you can't, it's probably no infection.
Will companies ever ask you, so somewhere like your bank or somewhere like Microsoft, will they ever ask to sort of take over control of your computer ring up with a problem?
No, they won't. But bear in mind that sometimes people who fall prey to this don't realise that they're actually handing over control. The person says, click this, say yes, okay, now that's out. And then they show you a bit of your computer and say, oh, look, that's evidence of infection.
Yeah.
And it's obviously no such thing. But no, they won't, so don't knowingly give them access. But it's not as simple as don't give them access, because sometimes people unknowingly do that. Don't let someone talk you through, you know, what to do on your computer remotely, because Microsoft and your internet service provider, they don't do this. Okay, and if you're unsure about who you're speaking to, you know, put the phone down and find the number independently.
Yeah,
preferably on another device. You know, check it on your smartphone or something, ring them independently, and just ask them if this is them.
Because you do hear as well about scams where people will ring you up. You'll say, I'll call you back once I've found the number, and they stay on the line. And so you think you've put the number in again and they're still on the line. And so you think you've gone back through.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why you should use a different phone line and use a different device as well to do the check. I mean, unfortunately, some of these they're very believable, and it's easy to think that none of us would ever fall prey to these things. But, you know, this is what they do for a living. They are believable, and particularly if you don't have a lot of technical knowledge. But use your nous. If you're at all suspicious, then act on that suspicion. Don't be embarrassed. It's like when people ring up and they say, oh, I just need to take you through security to check that you are, you know, who you say you are. And to which I say, you rang me. How do I know you are who you say you are? And first, we must establish your credentials before you can establish mine. And they're always quite understanding of that. If they're not understanding of it, it's probably because they're scammers. But it takes all sorts of forms. You know, people claiming to be your bank, saying that you've become a victim of fraud, that your money's about to be taken, we need to move it to a safe account.
Okay.
It's a shame, because I've spoken to people who, you know, are completely crestfallen and feel humiliated as well as the loss of money.
Yeah.
That they've fallen for it, and that by their own actions, in effect, that they've lost thousands of pounds.
Okay. Now, at some point, Fevzi, I'm going to have to interrupt you to get to Usain Bolt, who's going to be with Sonia in Rio. So we will interrupt you. We're expecting that sort of in the next couple of minutes. But don't forget, if you have got any questions for Fevzi, give us a call 0500 909 693 or send us a text to 85058. There's also social media at BBC5Live or email upallnight@bbc.co.uk. Let's crack on with a couple of questions, actually, Fevzi. So we'll start off with this one, which is from Holly, which says, I've got an iPhone 6 Plus. Every time I make a call, about 10 minutes in, my phone starts making loud screeching noises. It can't be heard by the person I'm speaking to, just me. She says, any ideas? It's incredibly annoying.
And it happened, I guess it's happened several minutes into it. I mean, it's an unusual one. It sounds, I mean, screeching noises are often feedback, and you'll know all about this being a broadcast professional yourself, but it's often if something is up too loud and the microphone is picking up the audio from the earpiece, that shouldn't happen even when an iPhone is set to its loudest setting, and particularly on the 6 Plus because it's such a big smartphone that the earpiece is a long way away. But if, for example, I don't know exactly how Holly is using the phone, but if, for example, she's using some sort of wireless Bluetooth speaker for the audio, maybe she's using it, you know, wirelessly, it is possible to set up an audio feedback loop. So if that's happening, try turning the volume down and try using it without any third-party add-ons such as a wireless earpiece, just in case that's picking it up. Beyond that, there are hardware faults that can also give rise to these sorts of issues, and therefore, if it's a 6 Plus, there's a good chance it's still within warranty, because that model's due to be replaced next month, so it should be less than a year old, in which case it will still be under warranty. So, Holly, just in case you're in the warranty and about not to be in the warranty, I don't know if you went for the, you know, AppleCare Plus extended warranty, but you should report this issue to Apple as a fault straight away, such that if your own efforts eventually come to naught and so forth, you have you've reported it within the warranty period, and therefore even if the problem's diagnosed just outside it, you'll still be covered. But you should do that and speak to Apple about it, because you know, once you've done the basic checks that I've suggested to you, because you might find, as I suspect, that it may be a hardware issue.
Do we know when the new iPhones are due to be out?
Sometime next month. I'm not sure the exact... No one's sure of the exact date, but somewhere around the 9th of September.
Peter is online.
Good morning. I try and make it clear as I can. My TV, right, it's a Samsung 32-inch, and it's only on that TV where I'm having this trouble. It's okay with all the other TVs. I don't know if you know what I mean by buckets of channels or pockets of channels on the Freeview. Do you know what I mean?
Groupings that come from a single transmitter.
It's on a communal aerial. And what it is, you get buckets of channels, like all the BBC on one channel, I think it's 25 or something. Mm-hmm. Then you get other pockets of channels where other TV, like ITV for one lot, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm trying to explain?
Yeah, groupings of channels, yes.
Yeah, that's it, yeah, grouping. Well, what happens is a few groupings of channels, they're all right, a lot of time they're all right, but other times they flare up. It's only one certain grouping, sometimes it's two. And at first, I thought it might have been the tuner, but it can't be, because wouldn't it affect all the channels, groupings, if it was the tuner, or could it just affect a couple of them?
So, Peter, it could be... It sounds like it is likely to be what is reaching your TV set. Now, that's either because certain signal groups are stronger than others, because although, you know, Freeview is digital television, those signals still travel, you know, on radio waves to your group antenna, your common antenna, and digital or not, they're subject to the laws of physics. So some signals can be stronger than others.
Is it only on one TV? Like, I just swapped it over because it was happening to date. I put on another TV and it's even a bit older.
Right.
It never happens on the other TV. It's just this one TV.
Okay, so then it can be then it, that, and that's a good test that you've done. It can be a combination of features, just like with some radios having better tuners than others. Some TV sets have got more sensitive tuners than others, and are better able to cope with poor signal or weak signal.
Yeah, what you get is a red bit error. If you know what I mean, it's called red bit error. Mm-hmm. If it's very high, that's when you get all the trouble where it sort of break up.
Yeah, so with the digital thing, when it starts to degrade, it becomes blocky. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, it becomes like a jigsaw puzzle sometimes, all over the place and breaking up.
Yeah, so it's loss of some of the information.
You know, it's a new thing, but I've got the filter for it, but it still does it. You know.
Okay, so you've got the filter that will filter out 4G signals. So
we think
it's not that. Okay, and have you tried retuning all the stations on the freeway?
Oh, yes, I've done all that. I've even tried, when I phoned up Samsung, they even told me to retune it, take the aerial out, retune it to wipe it clean.
Yeah,
then
yes.
Put it back. Oh, I tried all that and it still does it. It's only on this one set TV. You know, all the other TVs, it does it. Like, could be what you said, and it could be some, like, could be some two tuners are more sensitive than others.
Yeah, and it could be a combination of the fact that you can have an intermittently poor signal. And by the way, that poor signal may not be because a poor signal is reaching the antenna that's being used, but it can also be that signal is then being boosted and then split amongst all the residents in your building, I'm guessing. So it can be just the way that they do that means that the signal degrades too much and the signal, what's called the signal to noise ratio, drops. So if there's a certain amount of noise in the background on any signal, but and that's usually okay because the signal, the bit you want, is much louder, much stronger than the background noise. But if that signal starts to drop and it starts to become a comparable level to the background noise, which will remain the same, then you can have a problem. And the problem with these communal systems, what they often do, Peter, is that they amplify the signal. But when they amplify the signal, they're also amplifying the background noise. So if the signal to noise ratio is too low, then you've got a problem, because if they're of similar strength, you're not really helping anything by amplifying it. It would be worth asking if anyone else that shares that feed in your building is suffering a similar problem. And also, is your television within warranty?
Yes, it's within warranty, yeah.
Okay. Well, I think it's also worth saying to them, look, I've taken your advice, I've retuned it, I've blanked it out by disconnecting the aerial, retuned it, plugged in the aerial, tuned it back again, and it's still doing it. But when I plug in another television, it doesn't do it. Now, it may be that the real situation is it's an incompatibility. It's a bit of your telly and a bit of their signal. But I would try just laying the blame on them and seeing if, for example, they were to send an engineer or send another television, whether that might not solve the problem for you. Because if it's working reliably with another TV, then I think you're entitled to argue that your television is at least in part at fault.
So worth checking with other people if they're having the same problem, but then also checking the warranty on the TV. I think that's probably the best advice for Peter.
I'd flag it as a fault, because they've given diagnostic and basic information on how to cure the problem. He's done that. He's retuned it. He's put in his 4G filter, which, by the way, is necessary because 4G mobile phone signals are very close to FreeView signals and therefore interfere in some people's cases. He's done everything he can reasonably do.
Okay.
Time for them to do their bit, I think.
We've got Richard, who's in Newport, on the phone. Good morning, Richard. What's your problem this morning?
Malware.
Okay, explain
or virus.
Explain the problem for Fevzi, then.
Yes, I owe the expert in apology, by the way. Instead of calling him a geek, I called him a nerd. The wrong way round.
That's okay. But, yeah, in my circles, that's still a compliment, so thank you.
Yeah, it was months ago, and it was forgotten, and you were most surprised.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, about 4 years ago, our IT teacher, and I was doing a full-time course in it, warned us that when installing online antivirus, that never go online to install antivirus with a machine that's not already protected.
Yes.
And he explained to us there was a way round, but many antivirus software providers didn't provide you with the full antivirus software. They just provided you with a link. And one of the exceptions was Avast, which would enable you to download onto a memory stick plugged into a protected machine.
Yes.
Their software. And then you take the memory stick to the unprotected machine, which was offline, obviously, kept
yes.
offline. And then it became protected because you don't activate the software.
Yes.
So it was full executable file. Well, I tried it with Avast because I hadn't used my laptop for a while and it expired.
Yes.
So I went, did the thing with that. But this time the Avast provided a link. So while it was linking up with Avast, set up Avast itself, Avast site, I caught a virus, a nasty virus, which completely messed up the computer, the software in the computer. I couldn't then even introduce antivirus software.
Yes.
So how do I get around that problem?
Okay,
or
so
have I made a mistake?
Well, no, I don't think you've particularly made a mistake. I mean, there was a window of opportunity for your machine to become infected. Unfortunately, during that window, it did become infected. Probably just worth taking one step backwards, Richard, and just explaining a little bit more about the problem that you've suffered. So computers, as standard, when they come with Windows operating system, they don't have built-in active and sufficient anti-malware protection. So you have to install it like you install any other program. Now, if you go online, as your teacher has told you, if you go online and you install it by downloading it, then during that process where you're downloading it, installing it, updating it, your machine is online, it is vulnerable, and it is not fully protected. So what you need to do is you either go out and buy a disk and insert the disk and do it that way, or these days discs and CDs are less common. What you can do in almost all cases is you download on another safe machine an executable file, that's the installer, if you like, and then you download that installer to something like a USB drive, and whilst offline you plug the USB drive into the computer and you install it. At least at that point you then have active antivirus. The first thing you then do is update it so that you've got the latest definitions for the antivirus, and therefore the most up-to-date version of it and the one that's most likely to catch most malware. Unfortunately, for whatever reason, in your case, there was that window opened up, and it doesn't take long. There's been a lot of tests where they've put completely unprotected computers onto the internet, and sometimes they've become infected in as little as 10 or 15 minutes. It can be even less. You were a little bit unlucky, but
I couldn't download an executable file onto a safe computer. I couldn't find
is that because you
provide an executable file.
Is that because you didn't have access to another computer, or it wasn't playing ball?
No, I was on a safe computer and I downloaded thought I downloaded an executable file, and I merely downloaded a link.
Effectively a loader that went in. Yeah. So just so that you know, that you can go to any of the big software providers like Symantec's Norton or Kaspersky, for example. I personally, would go for one of those. I'm not so, ESET is another good one. I personally, opinions vary. I'm not so keen on McAfee products myself, or some of them at least. But you can get free versions of the software, or say with Norton, you get a 30-day trial period. And by the way, it's always worth doing that, because then if you then decide to buy after 30 days, say you get a year's license, it starts from the end of the 30 days, and you don't normally have to reinstall anything. All you do is you enter the license key that you've purchased. So that's a way of getting 13 months for the price of 12, by the way. But more to the point, with that, you get a fully functional version of the antivirus software without having to pay for it, and enough just to get you through that initial period, and then you can put the antivirus of your choice on there. I have to say, again, with things like Avast, they're good because they do free versions of Avast and AVG and so forth. Antivirus is one of those areas where my personal belief, based on quite a lot of experiences, that it's one of those areas where it's worth paying for a product and getting a little bit better protection, because when you consider what's at stake, it's worth paying. It can be, you get the right deal. I mean, I saw Norton, for example, the other day. It's normally about £40 for a 5-machine license, so you can protect 5 devices, be they PC, Mac, or even your mobile devices. That's normally £40. I saw it for about a tenner the other day.
So worth having a bit of a shop around.
Yeah. So that's what's happened. Now what do you do? What you need to do, assuming that you're using a Windows machine, is you need to run antivirus program or programs one at a time in safe mode. And safe mode is a diagnostic mode of Windows where background programs aren't being run. Windows starts up in its most basic bare bones incarnation. And the benefit of that is usually if you boot up in safe mode by switching on the computer and tapping the F8 or the function 8 key every 1 or 2 seconds until you get a black screen with white writing on it and follow those instructions, what it means is that you can then run your antivirus scan, and what you need to do is a full system scan. You can run it with a reduced risk that the virus is also running and interfering with the operation of your antivirus, because if you run it in normal mode and you're running a popular antivirus, some viruses are designed to interfere with your antivirus so that the antivirus reports no problem. So that's the issue. So run it in safe mode, run more than one antivirus. You don't necessarily need to have them installed all at the same time, but run different scanners, because things like super anti-spyware and malware bytes with a Y, these are good for picking up spyware infections that sometimes antivirus programs don't pick up.
Okay, hopefully that helps, Richard. You're super popular this morning, Fevzi. Let's take another call. Leslie in Oxford. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning to you. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello, Leslie.
My question is, can you run two televisions off of one roof area? At the moment, I've just got one quite modern television, and I'm ordering a bedroom, which is sort of a bed sitting room, and the aerial cable comes right over the roof where I am. So it'd be a simple thing to put a cable through from the bedroom and connect it, like physically connect it to the aerial, the wiring that comes down. But is that possible? Can I get a good signal like that?
It is possible. If the signal is, we alluded to this a little bit earlier, Leslie, if the signal that comes in is strong in the first place, so you've got a good aerial, it's a roof aerial, and therefore, you know, hopefully a strong signal, then you can. The conventional way of doing it is using what's called a distribution amplifier, which is a small plastic box with some electronics in it that generally you screw to the wall. So it has an input, which would be the input from the aerial, and it has two or more outputs, and it will normally amplify that signal as well. If you were to just use a sort of Y-shaped splitter of the signal, you would suffer a loss of signal, and depending upon the strength of the original signal and the run and the quality of the cables and various other factors, you may find that it deteriorates to a level where you start having reception problems. You can certainly try that, but my advice would be to go for a distribution amplifier, and maybe one with more than two outputs, and if you want to use them later, then it's already there. So then you can effectively send that signal around the house. There are other ways of doing this, by the way. There are there's various companies. I reviewed one the other day from a company called One for All, who are the people who do the remote controls, you know, to control several devices at once. They do a system where you can wirelessly forward even an HD, a high definition signal, from one part of the house to the other. The benefit of that is that you don't then have to run extra cabling around. You're sending the signal wirelessly. The downside is that wireless is rarely as good as a cable. So if you can run a cable, that would be my advice. But if it's a house where you're not allowed to run cables, or it's too much trouble, or you want to try the wireless solution first, then buy it from somewhere where you can return it if you're not happy with the performance. But there are these sort of wireless senders that you can also use.
There you go, Leslie. Hopefully that'll help. With those remote controls that control everything, I used to be able to do that in my old flat because it was so small that the radio turned on when I turned up the volume on my telly. Ah. It was really annoying. But I've moved now, so it's fine. Now, we've got more calls for you, Fevzi. Frank in London. Good morning, Frank.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. What can we help with this morning?
When I switch on my computer, the desktop image doesn't cover the complete screen. There's a space, blank space of about 5 inches on the right. And I've been told to hold the Windows logo,
yes,
hold that down, and press P twice, and then enter. And after several attempts, the image covers the whole screen. But I'm wondering why it's happening anyway, and is there something that I could use that's permanent rather than,
okay,
than do this every time?
Yeah, I understand. So with graphics that appear on your screen, inside your computer there's graphic circuitry. It used to be on a separate graphics card.
Yes.
It commonly now it's integrated into the main circuit board. But still, it's a separate graphic circuit that has to be made compatible with the rest of the computer by virtue of a little piece of software called a driver. In this case,
oh, yes,
it's called a graphics driver. This describes the capabilities of the graphics circuit to the operating system so that it knows how to interact with it and knows how to display things onto the screen. One, now, in that driver, it's a program and there are settings that can be altered within it, which will include default screen resolution. That's to say how many dots make up your physical screen and therefore how many dots the graphics circuit should be outputting to the screen.
It
may be, it's hard for me to visualize exactly what's happening, but it may well be that what's happening is that the default settings inside the driver are incorrect for your physical screen, and it's only using part of it and it's not making full display. So it's worth, first of all, checking that you're running the latest version of the graphics driver, and if you are, just to go into the settings. Now, often you can see in the bottom right hand corner, you often see that there is an icon that relates to the graphics. It may say something like Intel graphics, or it may say Nvidia graphics, for example. Often if you double click on that, up pops a window with the settings in it. So I think it's worth having a look at those settings to see if that can be changed. But that would be my recommendation. The problem with doing the key combination, as you've alluded to, is that it's not permanent, that when you boot up the computer, it goes back to its default settings. So it's those default settings that you need to get to. And it's worth sometimes, even if it's set correctly when you get there, it's worth setting it to a screen resolution which is incorrect, rebooting the computer and then resetting it once again to the correct resolution, because sometimes if a software is a bit buggy, it thinks it's already in the right place, so it won't let you change it because it's already, you know, ticking the right box, as it were.
I see.
But you move away to a wrong setting and then you move back to a correct one, and that will often allow you to reset.
I noticed that after a couple of attempts with what I described,
mm-hmm,
a voice comes on, a woman's voice, and navigation. And it starts telling me about navigation. And mm-hmm, there's a big thing on the screen there with all the writing. Navigation, what is that?
Hard to know. I'm guessing we're not talking about geographic navigation. We're probably talking about navigation of the operating system. It may be that a help system is kicking in.
It starts saying things like column one, two down, and all sorts of instructions.
So probably what you're accessing there is the what's called the accessibility settings. Now that's for people that may be, for example, partially sighted. It's talking you through. So is it giving you instructions to navigate, that is to move through the software or the document without being able to see it? Does that sound like what's happening?
Yes.
Yeah. So you are inadvertently accessing the accessibility options, which again would tend to mean that in that combination of key presses is not quite correct, because it's accessing accessibility settings, which are settings for people who are visually challenged or with other issues, and so it can make things bigger or it can talk you through it. You get a similar mode, for example, if you press on an iPad, for example, if you press the home button three times in rapid succession, it takes you into a mode where it describes everything on the screen. which if you don't want it can be very irksome, and if you don't know what's happened, very difficult to switch off again, which by the way is another three rapid presses of the home button.
Hopefully that all helps, Frank. Fingers crossed that that'll sort those out. Let's go through some more texts, Fevzi. This one, I read it and thought it was the start of a joke. It's from Neil in Oxford. My son walked into a swimming pool, but actually it says with his iPhone 5 in his pocket and it no longer works. Is it worth getting it repaired, and will the photos he's taken from the holiday he was on be recoverable, or is it not worth the expense?
Right, so it depends on how much damage has been done. And I'm assuming the phone was switched on at the time that he did that. I think it's worth going back to Apple with it, being very upfront about what's happened. Because, by the way, they have little detectors inside phones to let them know if it's been wet. Because some people go in and say, oh, no, I never dropped it down the toilet.
It just stopped working.
Yeah, it just stopped working. And they're not fools. But if you go in and be very straight and upfront with them, and particularly if the owner of the phone has taken for example, if they took out Apple Care Plus, which is an extended warranty, Apple Care Plus as opposed to standard Apple Care gives you accidental damage cover as well. I think two incidents within 2 years with a £39 excess. So you might find that actually you're already good to go because there's a policy in place that covers it. You might also find that you have accidental damage extensions on your household policy, for example, although beware about that because with some policies you affect your premium and no claims in successive renewal years. But it's worth looking into at least. But if you find that there isn't an insurance policy in place, and again, speak to Apple about Apple Care Plus, just go to them and say that this is what's happened. Let them examine it. Let them give you a quote, because varying amounts of damage can be done. If you were extremely lucky, you could put it in a bag full of rice, for example.
I was going to say, is that true or is it a myth that you can put it in rice?
Yeah, rice is a natural desiccant. That's to say it absorbs moisture from its surroundings. And if you leave it surrounded by rice, you know, when you get a piece of electronics, you're often new in the box, you often get this little bag.
Oh, the little silica gel thing.
Exactly. And that's a desiccant. That's there to suck moisture out of the air. And that's just normal moisture. That's not when it's been in a swimming pool. But you sometimes do get lucky and you can recover a phone. The trick there is not to power up the electronics, or if you have done, to shut it down completely. And if it were a phone where you could actually remove the battery, which in the case of an iPhone you can't, the advice would be to remove the battery so there's no danger of electrons trying to course through the connections and short circuiting any further. But yes, that can work. But in the first, I mean, that's something you'd do if you had no other option, you know, to try. But my advice is speak to Apple about it. Let them examine the phone. Be very open and honest about what's happened. Maybe they will take pity on you. Even if it's not a cost-effective repair, they will often offer you a cheap price on either a new phone or a refurbished handset. So you can, again, often, you know, for a few tens of pounds, get a replacement phone. They often do more than they have to do by virtue of law or warranty.
Okay.
And particularly if you're honest with them, they tend to take a more generous view.
Excellent. So fingers crossed those holiday photos may emerge at some point. Okay, we've got a text from Ian in Folkestone. Is it possible to put music on my Samsung S5 without using Windows Media Player? It doesn't always recognise the phone, and often when it does, it loses the ID tags, so the phone doesn't know who the artist is. It's so annoying. Long live vinyl.
Well, there were no ID tags on vinyl. I mean, you had to look up the sleeve notes.
Yeah.
I think. But yeah, I mean, it is possible. I mean, that phone, like any other smartphone, is essentially a computer, and it's possible to transfer files by quite a number of different means to it. You know, you could, for example, connect the phone either wirelessly or through a wire to a PC and literally copy them across, treating the phone as an external drive. So, you know, you have a C drive on your computer, maybe a D drive. When you plug in the phone, it can become an E drive if you set it up correctly. And then you can just transfer it across. You transfer it to a folder, and then whichever program you're using to play back back those files. You just need to tell it which folder it needs to look at to access the files. With regard to tags and metadata, that's to say the data that isn't the music itself but is information about the music, you know, be it sleeve notes, be it lyrics, be it the album art cover, whether that can be accessed will depend upon the software that you're using to play back and what its capabilities are and what its compatibility is. It may be that certain playback software has particular requirements. There are some standards, but not all software complies with those standards, and those standards are often relate to the most basic information anyway. So iTunes, for example, requires you know, things to be set up in a particular way and tags to be set up in a particular way. So you kind of, although you can get the basic functionality with almost any player to get the additional sort of the metadata, if you like, the data around the music, then you might need to do steps that are specific to the player of your choice. And it's worth just trying a few different players. By the way, just a word of advice: before you start downloading a lot of players through the App Store, be it the Google Play Store for Android or iOS, make sure that you're very careful about what you download. Don't download any new players. Don't download any players that haven't got lots and lots of positive reviews. Look out, because sometimes a legitimate program has many fake versions of it with very similar names, sometimes identical names, and it's very easy to download the wrong one and find that you've got a piece of malware. So in addition to running antivirus and anti-malware software on your mobile device, which we should now be doing, by the way, you just need to be really cautious about where you download from, what the provenance of that is, and make sure that you're not the first to download it. Don't be the guinea pig.
Yeah.
Let other people who don't listen to this program download it.
Yeah, you don't want to be the guinea pig.
and look for it, because, you know, it's amazing. You see a number of apps that, you know, the versions of, for example, of things that purport to be Pokemon Go, there are so many of them, and they look very convincing, and sometimes they steal the artwork and so forth. So you have to look at how long has it been there. If it's a few days or a week or even, you know, a couple of weeks, be suspicious. And look, you know, if you look down the reviews and it says scam, fake, scam, you know, then you've got to...
Yeah, don't do it.
Yeah, but make sure there's, you know, a few hundred reviews there, and make sure that they're almost all good.
Excellent. Well, we've run out of time again. Thank you very much, Fevzi. And we should mention that this hour is available as a podcast. So if you go online, search for Let's Talk About Tech.
On digital and online. This is BBC Radio 5 Live. bbc.co.uk/5live.